The following program is not a production of Audio Journal. External programs like this are selected with the interests of our audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Blindness and Disability News Hour from Mind's Eye Radio in Belleville, Illinois. This program covers the week of April 14th, 2024. Welcome back to the program. Hope everyone is doing well and staying comfortable in this very summer-like weather we are having. We've got lots of interesting stories for you this week, so let's get started. We're going to pay a visit to the American Council of the Blind at acb.org and their April 2024 Braille Forum. And this story by Regina Marie Brink, A Better World. As a child, I had no idea we were poor. I knew my grandmother on my mother's side rushed in from work sometimes when we were there, smelling of fish because she worked at a cannery. I didn't know then that she worked 10-hour days and was not allowed to sit down. She still made a full meal of rice, beans, fresh homemade flour tortillas, and some kind of meat or main dish every day. Things like tamales or enchiladas or chicken mole, my favorite, were for holidays and special occasions. I grew up hearing Spanish spoken and sung around me. However, unbeknownst to me, my mother and father were severely punished as children for speaking Spanish in school, including my mother being struck with a paddle by the principal when she was six. My family, as a result, stressed English. Other Hispanic children looked down on us when we went to school. I still find myself deflecting disparaging comments about my family and me because my siblings and I are not fluent in Spanish. I tried to teach myself in high school, and my uncle taught me to sing in Spanish. I can write out what I want to say and read it fluidly. This still does not mean I am fully accepted by other bilingual speakers. I realized early on that my skin was much lighter than the rest of the family. Each of my brothers, who appear Hispanic and have darker features, have been beaten by the police, though never arrested or charged with any crime. They also received a very different and much lower quality of education than I did. Most likely, this was because I received services through the resource program for the blind, and I attended different schools than my brothers. I also realized that I was sometimes treated much better when the rest of my family was not around. Aside from black curly hair, I have hazel green eyes and a lighter complexion. Without my family, people think I might be Italian or Greek. Someone who went to my predominantly Caucasian high school once asked me if my grandmother was our maid. I have to sit in groups where Hispanic people are disparaged and called derogatory names. Early on, I decided I would not pass for Caucasian. I would speak up and defend the family I loved. I soon realized, too, that my connection to my ancestors and traditions was much stronger than most of the children around me. My mother and father, however, were fighting battles of their own. They insisted on bringing me up to be self-sufficient and independent, teaching me blindness skills themselves as I was able to do them, just as sighted children grow up with increasing responsibilities. However, this went against the customs and traditions of our culture. The urge to take care of me and to just keep me safe within the family were very strong. My parents were berated for the way they were raising me. My uncle once asked my father, quote, "Why are you sending her to college? All she's going to do is wash dishes and have babies anyway," unquote. This could not be further from the truth. I have worked since I was 16 and have been very active in my community, sitting on boards, participating in parenting and advocacy organizations, and serving in various capacities at church, all while raising four children, partly as a single parent. Many times, people who wish to embrace the Hispanic community concentrate on those who need Spanish translation. This is valuable. However, many of us speak English just fine. Our issues surrounding inclusion, dignity, and microaggressions are very different. We must fight our families to achieve independence and the rest of society to receive equity, even among our fellow blind and low-vision advocates. I have been in many uncomfortable situations where a colleague who is blind or has low vision has made an ethnically charged or very bigoted statement in front of me, and I am faced with a choice. Do I say something, or let it pass to keep our focus on the work we are doing together? If I let it pass, how much worse will it get? What do I do with the hurt I feel? What if it drives others like me away from the cause? I have chosen, whenever I can, to be as courteous as possible, but to insist on equity and inclusion wherever I go, not only for Hispanic people, but for all people, no matter their race, who they love, or their limitations or disabilities. Not everyone was blessed with parents like mine, who taught me to speak up and stand strong. Join me in this resolve so we can make a better, safer world for all. For our next story on this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour, we turn to the Assistive Technology Blog, or ATB, and you can find them online at assistivetechnologyblog.com. The story from April 9th, Mattel launches Scrabble Together, a more inclusive and collaborative word game experience. Mattel is introducing a new version of Scrabble called Scrabble Together, aimed at making the game more collaborative and accessible, especially for those who might find traditional word games daunting. The new version features a double-sided board, with the original game on one side and the new version on the other. What does the new version include, you may ask? It includes helper cards, a simpler scoring system, and a faster pace of play. Additionally, players can now compete in teams, adding a new dynamic to the game that the original game doesn't offer. The new Scrabble Together game addresses changing preferences of younger players, particularly Gen Z, who may not enjoy the competitive nature of the original Scrabble. Instead, they seek a game that emphasizes enjoyment of language, creativity, and social interaction. The inclusion of helper cards, prompts, and clues allows players to adjust the challenge level to their liking, with the goal being to complete 20 challenges to win. This launch marks the most significant change in Scrabble's 75-year history, according to Mattel. By introducing Scrabble Together, the company aims to ensure the game remains relevant and inclusive for all players, including those who previously felt word games weren't for them. The move reflects broader trends in gaming preferences, with a growing interest in collaborative experiences over traditional competitive gameplay. Great for bridging gaps and promoting accessibility. The introduction of Scrabble Together could prove to be incredibly beneficial for individuals with disabilities, including those with cognitive impairments, low reading literacy, and anyone facing unfamiliar languages or topics. The inclusion of helper cards and prompts in the game provides valuable support for players who may struggle with traditional gameplay due to cognitive disabilities, helping to level the playing field and allowing them to fully participate and enjoy the game. Additionally, the simplified scoring system and collaborative nature of the game make it more accessible for those with low reading literacy, reducing barriers to engagement and fostering a new sense of inclusion. Moreover, for individuals encountering an unknown topic or language, Scrabble Together will offer an opportunity for exploration and learning in a supportive and enjoyable environment, where players can work together to decipher words and meanings, thereby enhancing their language skills and cultural understanding. Overall, the introduction of Scrabble Together represents a significant step towards creating inclusive gaming experiences for individuals of diverse abilities and backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Our next story on this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour is actually a press release from the Office of Public Affairs, the U.S. Department of Justice. The Justice Department to publish final rule to strengthen web and mobile app access for people with disabilities. And this was released on Monday, April 8th. Attorney General Merrick B. Garland today signed a final rule under Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, to ensure the accessibility of web content and mobile applications or apps for people with disabilities. This final rule clarifies the obligations of state and local governments to make their websites and mobile applications accessible. Every day, people across the country use the web and mobile apps to access public programs and services, including emergency information, courts, healthcare providers, schools, voting information, parking, permit applications, tax payments, and transit updates. If these technologies are not accessible, it can be difficult or impossible for people with disabilities to access critical services. Consequently, individuals with disabilities may be excluded from accessing public services that other people routinely use. Quote, "This final rule marks the Justice Department's latest effort to ensure that no person is denied access to government services, programs, or activities because of a disability," said Attorney General Merrick B. Garland. "By issuing clear and consistent accessibility standards for state and local governments' digital content, this rule advances the ADA's promise of equal participation in society for people with disabilities. I want to thank the many public servants across the department, led by the Civil Rights Division, for their tremendous work on this rule. This rule affirms the Justice Department's unwavering commitment to achieving the promise of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ensuring that people with disabilities can fully and equally participate in our society," said Acting Associate Attorney General Benjamin C. Meiser. "The rule, which clarifies the standards for making mobile apps and websites accessible, is vital to people's ability to use and benefit from public programs and services," unquote. "This rule is truly historic and long overdue, as it will help break down barriers that have kept people with disabilities from fully participating in American life," said Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark of the Civil Rights Division. "The rule will help ensure that people with disabilities have equal access to a full range of government services, including critical activities like voting, taking online courses, applying for public benefits, filing taxes, and more. For far too long, people with disabilities have been left behind as we've witnessed more services and government activity increasingly move online. This rule is helping to usher us into a new era by bringing an end to the discrimination faced by millions of Americans with vision, hearing and cognitive and manual dexterity disabilities across our country," unquote. The rule will provide much-needed standards for addressing a wide variety of barriers. For example, the rule will help ensure blind individuals can access information about public transportation on a city's mobile app or website, enable people who are deaf or hard of hearing to participate in university lectures online, and allow individuals with manual disabilities affecting their ability to use a mouse to access web information about voter registration. Ensuring that people with disabilities can access web content and mobile apps and fully participate in public programs and services will improve the day-to-day lives of individuals with disabilities in communities throughout the country. The final rule mandates technical standards for state and local governments to help ensure the accessibility of their programs and services provided through the web and mobile apps. By providing clarity on how to make sure these platforms are accessible for people with disabilities, this final rule advances the ADA's promise of a more inclusive society. The final rule will soon be available for review on the Federal Register's website at www.federalregister.gov. That's www.federalregister.gov. A fact sheet detailing information about the final rule is available online at ada.gov. For further information on the Civil Rights Division, please visit the department's website at www.justice.gov/CRT. For information and inquiries regarding the ADA, please contact the department's toll-free ADA information line at 800-514-0301 for voice, or 833-610-1264 for TTY, or visit the ADA website at www.ada.gov. As we continue with this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour, let's pay a visit to Veronica Lewis and her website, Veronica with Four Eyes. You can find her online at veronica.com. That's veroniiica.com. Reading Chegg e-textbooks with low vision. I started using Chegg e-textbooks, and that's spelled C-H-E-G-G, and their e-reader application when I had to rent a digital book for a lab class and couldn't find it from any other websites that would support adjustable font sizes for reading, a must-have feature for someone with low vision that can't read standard-sized font. Since then, I've been able to find many other e-textbooks for rent on Chegg that I couldn't find anywhere else, and have used their e-reader tool to read titles directly from my web browser. Here are my tips for reading Chegg e-textbooks with low vision and using the Chegg e-reader, as well as general information about Chegg accessibility for assistive technology users. First, an overview. Chegg is an online textbook store where students can buy or rent copies of their textbooks, either as physical books or e-books or e-textbooks. Rented e-textbooks can be read via Chegg's mobile applications for iOS and Android, or with the web browser application, and no downloads are required, while purchased e-textbooks can be read within Chegg applications or downloaded for use with other applications. Chegg books are priced competitively, and students can rent or buy books directly through the Chegg website. And their website is chegg.com. That's C-H-E-G-G.com. What's included in a Chegg e-textbook? While the exact contents of a textbook will vary depending on the title and subject matter, regular users of accessible media and e-books often experience the frustration of having missing or inaccessible content in their textbooks. In my experience, Chegg e-textbooks have always included the following items: charts and graphs in the same places they would be found in the physical book, high-resolution images that can be opened in a larger window or enlarged. In my experience, the vast majority of images do not have alt text or image descriptions embedded. In-text hyperlinks to figures and other sections of the chapter or book. A table of contents. Sidebar text and images displayed within a single column layout. And tagged headings for chapter content. Some of these features may sound like an obvious thing to include, but I've encountered so-called accessible textbooks that are missing at least one and sometimes all of these features, which can be frustrating when trying to complete class readings and having missing information. Accessing the table of contents. The table of contents for Chegg e-textbooks uses the same page numbers and organizational structure as the physical book, though many of the books I've read have a nested list so that I can expand or collapse different sections as needed without opening everything. Subheadings are also included for chapter-level table of contents, along with page numbers. Alternatively, users can use the Search Across Book feature by selecting the magnifying glass icon and typing in the name of a chapter, page number, figure, or other keyword to find where they want to go. It's worth noting that the table of contents itself does not display in large print on the web application, so users may want to use screen magnification software, such as Magnifier or Zoom, to enlarge the text or use the search feature. The table of contents can be opened or closed at any time by selecting the icon on the left side of the screen. By default, the table of contents opens at the start of a reading session or when opening a book. Bookmarks, highlights, and notes. Within the e-textbook, students can add bookmarks, highlight text, and write out notes that can be searched later. For adding highlights and notes, users will need to select the text they want to highlight or make a note of by clicking and dragging across the area of text, and then selecting either a highlighter color or add note. To open a note, students can select the note icon next to their text, and the note will open in the margin of the page on the right side. Notes can be edited or deleted by selecting the pencil icon. Deleting all of the contents of a note will automatically remove it from the page. For students looking for the definition or more information on a term, there are two different options. One is to highlight the text and select Look Up in Wikipedia from the drop-down menu under Add Note. And the other is a beta feature for definitions that can be manually enabled in the More Options menu. A note on bookmarks. I don't know if Chegg removed the bookmarks feature for textbooks or if it is just not available from the publisher, but the bookmark icon that was typically in the top right corner of the e-reader has disappeared from the web application. Chegg support did not have an explanation for why this is happening or how to fix it when I contacted them earlier this month. So for now, I would recommend using the Add Note feature to make bookmarks, and use the search function to locate notes. Reader preferences, Chegg or large print. Since I have low vision, I rely on several display features in order to read text such as large print or customizable fonts. Chegg offers several options for customizing visual displays in their reader preferences menu, which include text size, small, normal, large, extra large, font, default, sans serif, old style, modern, humanist, monospace, open dyslexic, Atkinson, hyperlegible, mode, day, night, sepia, or cyan, margin, small, medium, or large, line height, small, medium, or large, equivalent to double spacing, and customizable highlighter colors. I can also use Chegg with additional browser zoom to make the text and other visual elements even larger. It's worth noting that the print feature for saving content as a PDF does not support any of the display settings set with reader preferences. It is set to the publisher defaults. Using Chegg with read aloud text to speech. Chegg has a built-in read-aloud feature with word-level highlighting so users can follow along with the text as it is read aloud. Read aloud can be accessed through either the More Options menu in the top right corner or by highlighting text and selecting Read Aloud from here. Options for customizing read aloud include voice speed from 0.5x to 4.0x, customized in increments of 0.1x on a slider, selecting voice from built-in OS voices, and simplified reading mode versus detail reading mode. Simplified skips footnotes, figures, and other content, while detailed reading mode reads everything. When enabled, read aloud controls are pinned to the top of the screen to the left of the search icon. Using Chegg e-reader with a screen reader and keyboard access. In my personal experience, I've found that reading Chegg e-reader with a screen reader like JAWS, NVDA, Narrator, or VoiceOver can be wildly inconsistent depending on the publisher of the original textbook. While all of the buttons and menus are labeled within the e-reader application, it can be frustrating to read text content and images may be missing alt text or image descriptions from the publisher. In addition, features like highlighting and notes are inaccessible with keyboard access. Based on this information, I do not recommend using the Chegg e-reader for people who exclusively use screen readers or for non-visual access. In other words, Chegg e-reader and Chegg e-textbooks is inaccessible for the majority of screen reader tools. However, I have had positive experiences with the read aloud and text to speech features for reading text out loud. How I use the Chegg e-reader with low vision. Chegg offered competitive pricing and was one of the only places that offered rentals for some of my more expensive e-textbooks, so I have used them for a few courses over the years. Since many of my professors don't have us read from textbooks during class, I often would use the web application on my desktop computer to read from books while taking notes in another application, or refer to the textbook while working on homework. Some of my favorite features of the Chegg e-reader include single page or single column layout. No horizontal scrolling to read sidebars or having multiple text columns stacked up next to each other, which can be challenging with double vision. Options to customize font instead of using the publisher default. My favorites include Sans Serif and Atkinson Hyperlegible. I can open images in a new tab to enlarge them or select an image and zoom in to read more information. And table formatting is preserved so I can see how the text is organized. Does Chegg have features that really stand out against other reading applications? Well, honestly, no. However, some titles may not be available to rent or in digital formats elsewhere, or may be cost prohibitive. And I appreciate being able to use Chegg to get a digital copy of a textbook near instantaneously or for a much cheaper price if I can't get it anywhere else. More thoughts on reading Chegg e-textbooks with low vision. Chegg offers an additional study service that includes textbook solutions and homework help, but this is not required in order to use Chegg's e-reader or to purchase or rent books. I have not used this service and tested it or tested it with assistive technology. If needed, students can copy, paste text from a textbook into another application. For example, I might copy homework problems listed at the end of a chapter into a Word document so that I don't have to keep flipping back and forth between windows. For our next story on this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour, let's visit the American Printing House at aph.org and hear about the Monarch, Improving Braille Literacy for Students. And this was published on April 5th. Braille helps students who are blind or low vision with reading, writing, and comprehension so they can succeed in school and life. APH created the Monarch, a 10-line by 32-cell refreshable Braille display that can render lines of Braille and tactile graphics on the same surface to increase student access to Braille textbooks and classroom materials. The Monarch has spread its wings and is making strides to improve Braille literacy for students of all ages. One of the biggest advantages of the Monarch is its multi-line Braille display. Crystal Guillory, an itinerant teacher of the visually impaired, or TVI, from Ruston, Louisiana, has witnessed this firsthand as one of her students transitions from print to Braille. Quote, she loves the fact that the display appears as a half page of Braille. She's used to seeing a screen on the Chromebook where she can see paragraphs on a page, unquote. Now, the monarch appears similar, except the words are in Braille, not print. This was a huge motivator for the student to continue Braille instruction. The monarch can also zoom in and out, allowing the copy on the display to appear single-spaced or double-spaced. When her students were younger, Crystal had to show them what single-spaced and double-spaced meant by writing copy on a Perkins Brailler. Now the students can adjust the spacing in their documents on the monarch with ease. Quote, "My students have loved being able to write and edit on the monarch. If they're writing in a file and they need to go edit and hop around, they like it double-spaced so they can find their cursor more easily," unquote, said Crystal. Her students call the cursor the Waffle, based on the shape of its 9 Braille dots. They use the Braille keyboard or the directional cross key, or D-pad as they call it, to pan the display. One student, who has some motor difficulties, has had success using the D-pad with one hand to move the display and using one finger on her right hand to read Braille that is double-spaced. The Monarch has allowed Crystal students to read Braille with both hands, returning to the traditional method of reading hard copy Braille. One of Crystal's adult students, who learned Braille later in life, was able to drastically improve her reading speed with the Monarch. As she watched her read Alice in Wonderland, Crystal said, quote, "I watched her hands, and they just got faster and faster. Reading on a Braille display with multiple lines was more natural, like reading a physical book, and smoother as the student didn't need to keep advancing one line at a time like they would on a one-line Braille display," unquote. Student understanding of spatial awareness also increased with the development of the Monarch. With 10 lines of Braille, they can now see centered chapter titles, paragraph and page breaks, formatted lists, and much more that wasn't possible to discern a one-time display. Quote, "When one of my students was writing or editing on the Monarch, she had fewer extra spaces," Crystal said. "If she went to edit and correct something, add in a word or delete a word, she seemed to notice that she had extra Braille cells in between that she didn't need, whereas on the one-line Braille display, I'd sometimes see 6 spaces between the subject and the verb," unquote. Crystal believes that being trained on the Monarch before using the device with students will aid in her ability to teach Braille literacy skills. Quote, "What happens with most TV eyes is that you feel like you can only learn the basics of a new device, and then you can't get much further because you have to give it to the student," Crystal said. The Monarch teacher training gave teachers the ability to learn the entire device before placing it in students' hands. It is empowering the TV eye so that they are doing more Braille literacy lessons for their students as well, unquote. And if you have just joined us, you're listening to the Blindness and Disability News Hour from Mind's Eye Radio in Belleville, Illinois. This program covers the week of April 14th, 2024. And now, back to the program. Our next story comes from Vision Ireland, and you can find them online at vi.ie. The Simple Radio App, enhancing accessibility in the world of radio streaming. And this was written by Myreed O'Mahony. Simple Radio is an app that can be installed on iPhones, iPads, and Android devices. The app allows you to listen and stream a huge selection of radio stations from various countries all over the world, which is really cool. It also has a search feature where you can type in the name of the radio station you are looking for, e.g., Red FM, and a list of matches that contain Red FM will show up. For example, I am being presented with Red FM in Vancouver, one in Toronto, one in Cork, etc. When you are navigating through the results, the most important thing to listen out for is the country. Once you find the stations you want, tap twice quickly to start playing the station. When an app contains so many radio stations from all over the world, using the search feature is much more efficient than manually navigating through the list to find the station you're looking for. The app also allows you to add and remove stations from your favorites, making your favorite stations easier to find and start listening to. One of my favorite radio stations is Gold 104.3, which is an 80s and 90s Australian radio station. Simple Radio also has a jukebox feature, and depending on your taste in music, it has different categories of music stations to choose from, such as pop, dance, romantic, the classics, jazz, country, 80s, etc. Simple Radio is a free app, but you can also pay a yearly subscription to get premium features, such as no visual ads, a sleep timer, and priority customer support. You can get a 7-day free trial of these features, but if you don't cancel your subscription before the 7-day trial is up, you will be charged the yearly price. Once you install the app, you will be presented with a message asking if you want to pay for the premium annual subscription. If you would prefer to continue using the free version, swipe to close and double tap with one finger to activate it. You will then be presented with a pop-up consent message, so swipe to continue and double tap to activate it. Near the very top of the screen, it has a list of recommended radio stations, such as News Talk, RTE Radio 1, LBC Radio London, United Kingdom, etc. If you swipe to the right once on each of these stations, VoiceOver reads to add to favorites, so double tap with one finger if you would like to add any of these recommended stations to your favorites. At the very bottom of the page, you have four tabs which are listed as follows. Favorites are where you find all the stations you have added to your favorites list. Search where you can search for a particular radio station, listen to it, and add it to your favorites. Jukebox, where you can select different categories of music based on your interests. And Premium, where you can pay per year to have visual ads removed and get features such as a sleep timer, where you can set a timer for the radio station you are listening to stop playing after so much time, and get access to priority customer support. Once playing a radio station, along the button where the various tabs are, you do also have a pause button and a close button, and if you want to pause the station or close out of the ad that pops up. VoiceOver does read these buttons. And in conclusion, Simple Radio is a very good app that allows you to stream and listen to thousands of radio stations from all over the world. You do need to have your device connected to Wi-Fi or have mobile data enabled to use this app. Simple Radio is a very user-friendly app and is very accessible with VoiceOver. Being able to search for any radio station and add or remove them from your favorites is a really nice feature, as with so many options of radio stations available, there is always something interesting to listen to. I have tried a few good radio apps in the past and found them much more complex to use. While I am happy to use the free version of the app and close the full screen visual ads that often pop up, some people may choose to pay yearly to not have these ads. For our next story, we turn to the April 2024 issue of the Braille Monitor magazine, a publication of the National Federation of the Blind, and you can find them online at nfb.org. To equalize the world of audio, let's add accessibility to the mix. And this is written by Michelle Guadalupe Felix Garcia, and it's introduced by these words from the editor of the Braille Monitor. Here's a piece that shows the value of perseverance and dedication to follow a dream. Many of us love audio, but the industry is becoming digital not only in its recording, but in the way it displays settings that can be adjusted. It is not at all blind-friendly in its testing to become credentialed, but this is just another jump for someone determined to succeed. Monitor readers have heard from Michelle before, and you will not be disappointed in her second appearance. In his book Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us, New York Times best-selling author Daniel H. Pink offers a strategy for finding our purpose. Ask yourself two questions, he says. What gets you up in the morning, and what keeps you up at night? The answers for each human being will be as diverse and unique as there are species of wildflowers on this earth. To make our lives rewarding and meaningful, we often have more than one answer to these questions. I am here to share what sparks the energy in my brain and lights the fire within me. Audio. My alarm rang at 3:15 a.m., and I was not bothered in the slightest. I was about to embark on the exhilarating journey of taking a virtual course offered in England and available to me all the way in Mexico. I had won a scholarship to learn what was necessary to get a certification on Pro Tools, the gold standard in the music industry. This software is the norm in recording studios, film post-production facilities, and on-location sound all over the world. It was taught by Leslie Gaston Bird, now president of the Audio Engineering Society, and Phoebe Adeldemoa, an audio mixer from Nigeria, in a two-week intensive format. The sessions were 5 hours long, with some breaks in between, Monday through Friday. Then on Saturdays, each student would take a test on our knowledge. If we passed, we would go on to the next week's round. Upon successful completion of both exams, we would earn the Pro Tools Certified Official Badge from Avid, the manufacturer. The digital audio workstation is accessible with the built-in screen reader for Mac OS, VoiceOver. But the tests are highly visual in nature because they rely on screenshots of windows, the shapes of tools and buttons, as well as questions on zooming capabilities and mouse functions. I had wished to get certified for a long time, but 5 years ago, a fellow blind audio engineer told me to forget it. He said it was going to be too difficult because the materials are not adapted for test takers without eyesight. But how did the goal of doing sound for a living start? I found my dream at a Coldplay concert. After sleepless nights of meticulous strategy crafting and 52 emails aimed at the chance to play Clocks with my favorite band at the piano, Coldplay invited me in for the adventure of a lifetime. Their legendary status, complemented by their endless humility, shined through. I appreciated everything that they did, from their efforts to speak Spanish to the incredible amount of trust they granted to a stranger and her family, to watch a rehearsal a few feet from the stage, hug the members, and play their official A Head Full of Dreams tour piano, decorated with flowers and a multitude of vibrant colors. I had been into sound for a very long time, since I was 13, and made my head ache after playing with unhealthy amounts of reverb. But this moment marked a before and after. Listening to the pristine, transparent signal of their in-ear monitors, watching the team united as a great big family, working quickly to achieve spectacular results for the audience's enjoyment, and passing by the machine room, feeling the heat emanating from the lighting boards and mixing desks, all of these were reasons that truly consolidated my desire to dedicate my life to sound, and I wouldn't like to envision myself doing anything else. The road wouldn't be all petals and roses, though. On my first week at San Diego State University, pursuing a bachelor's degree in music recording technology and audio design, my live sound reinforcement professor called my parents aside to have a conversation without me. Later, he called me as well to declare, quote, "You should change your major," unquote. What was he talking about? The sentence felt like a bomb upon my family and me. We had traveled over 300 miles to relocate our lives to a country whose language and culture are not our own. My mom had embraced her fears to learn to drive on U.S. freeways, which are different from the highways in Mexico, to support my education. My dad was willing to spend 4 years living alone, working from Mexico and making six-hour trips to visit us every 2 weeks. I bet everyone on the dream of getting accepted as an international student, trying to get my application noticed among the 93,000 that made up the pile. Now this professor was saying that the career I had chosen is extremely difficult for someone who can see, let alone who is blind. Quote, "It's impossible," he stated, unquote. Not having given me the chance to speak, I had judged I had been judged before my first class period, before I turned in any assignments. Quote, perhaps you should enroll in composition instead, unquote, he opined. Interestingly, this would mean that I would take all the other classes except for his. In that moment, I had two choices. I could drop out of college, forget my purpose, and go back to my country. Certainly, my soul couldn't stand listening to the bells of the carillon that marked every hour in the student union building, while knowing that I had failed. Alternatively, I could press on, gather courage, and keep going in spite of all the odds, ignoring all the voices urging me to recede from the challenge and run away. Well, what did I decide to do? I decided not to listen. Smith Recital Hall is the birthplace of an annual jazz, classical, and world music concert series. The 200-seat capacity venue hosts hundreds of events and serves as the training ground for students who need to practice their front-of-house mixing and recording skills. A Soundcraft VI-4 mixing console was the first learning tool and the first great obstacle for me. A 16-channel surface with tactile faders is not accessible enough when you're confronted with a touchscreen to patch your single flow and access all menus. But I'm not used to taking no for an answer, and it was our turn to put the designer hats on. When engineers don't have a solution, we create it from the ground up. We invented a 16x6 system to be pasted on a cardboard frame surrounding the screen of the console. Horizontally, it told me where each channel began, and vertically, it showed me the margins of each menu page, such as inputs, outputs, sends A and B, EQ, and dynamics. The method wasn't perfect, but by touching perpendicular the dots of the function that I wanted to carry out, then drawing a mental square and calculating where the screen touch button laid, I was able to run sound as my peers did, and the audience liked it. My friends helped me learn the board's layout, and soon I was fluent in its operation. Towards the closing of the semester, we had to take a final exam. If we passed, we had the chance to earn a pair of headphones. My instructor tried to force me to take the console test orally instead of hands-on because, quote, it would be too visual, unquote. I sat down in front of the desk and let him know that I wasn't moving until I was given the same exam my classmates took. He had no choice. He administered the interactive questionnaire, and I succeeded with flying colors. I don't think I ever changed my professor's mind, but long story short, he resigned before I did. That pair of headphones not only signifies that I learned the material well, it also serves as a reminder that I am strong. Experiences like this build up my character and make me find within me the spirit of a warrior who isn't afraid to stand up for what she believes in and who fights for her rights if she must. But I wasn't always so confident in myself. Other people contributed to my perseverance in this critical period through their unbreakable belief in me. When we were interns at the studio, which we lovingly called the Crow's Nest, we set up for big bands, ensembles, and orchestras. One of the required items was securing tripping hazards such as cables and snakes to the ground with gaffing tape. Weekly, we were divided into teams to perform the live sound duties, and often my instructor wanted to leave me as a floater member, quote, to be called only when needed, unquote. This was only a way of avoiding telling me a decision not to take my help was already in place. My white cane for almost every crew I encountered was a symbol of not being able to do anything. Though I look forward to every future event with real anticipation, practically every time I asked if I could help with something, I was politely told staff was complete for the evening, so not that day. It feels just as disheartening as when a group of friends asked for help in moving from one house to another. I show up, and they tell me to sit down because it is crowded and everything is already done. I had begun internalizing the doubts my professor held about me. Fortunately, I had a really good relationship with our internship supervisor, Kevin, who thought about my abilities differently. I asked him, "Who is gaffing today?" To which he replied, "You, Michelle, you are." Surprised and a little shocked, I asked how I could do that. I could see myself setting up mic stands and plugging in monitors, but I hadn't imagined a way to make straight, organized lines of cable without eyesight. Quote, "Feel the ground," he said. Words can hurt or heal, strengthen or create doubt, edify or destroy. Words are an immensely powerful medium. These three words taught me an unforgettable lesson. They taught me that I can overcome my mental limits and tear them down, that I mustn't judge my efficacy to pursue something if I haven't tried to do it, and then I must give myself ample practice with the discipline beforehand. I must function with the belief that there's an immense wealth of approaches and ways to do things that I do not yet comprehend. This wasn't the only time that someone opened my eyes to new possibilities and methods to achieve results. John Cull, prolific composer and orchestrator for films such as Black Panther, Avatar, and Harry Potter and the Fantastic Beasts, had the task of teaching me music for audiovisual media. Personally, I was certain that film scoring was reserved for people whose eyes could follow and observe the action playing out on screen. I was in for a delightful surprise. My professor carefully crafted time notes that described each scene and facial expression, landscapes and animation effects, and the slightest changes not to the second but to the frame. Armed with this level of equality, I composed for different genres of film and reached the summit of learning with the same amount of constructive feedback given to my classmates. Toward the end of the semester, we had to turn in a final project. We'd choose a film clip to write music to, and John enlisted the help of renowned music editor Joe E. Rand, whose credits span from Titanic to West Side Story, and whose clients include John Williams and Randy Newman. He delivered the time notes of a scene from How to Train Your Dragon for me to score. For countless decades, time notes were the norm, until they somehow fell out of fashion. The clip I picked was completely silent. I can't tell you what a liberating experience it was to be able to write for a medium without any sound to guide me. It gave rise to new forms of expression that could only use my mind as their compass. Logic Pro, with its intuitive nature and accessibility built into every corner, was also my ally. I found treasures in the people life have blessed me with, and thanks to their trust, I wrote compositions whose quality my teachers praised, and that I feel remarkably proud of myself for persisting and proud of them for believing in me. The blind helped the blind, too. During my last year of university, Corey Wilkins, an audio engineer, drummer, and composer, gave me a chance to acquire skills in his studio. He let me use his collection of microphones, guitar amps, and best of all, an Alesis HD24 machine that operates almost exactly like an analog tape recorder from back in the day. He never treated me like a coffee-making intern who is cautioned to stay away from equipment and keep to herself. On the contrary, he gave me the freedom to shadow his sessions, make mistakes, and become an assistant for some of his projects, where he can finally focus on being a musician and forget about the technical side, since I was running it. He patiently explained how to position the mics and how we can tell by ear if they will record with our desired acoustic flow, or acoustic flavor, pardon me. He told me how helpful it is to get to the venue early and explore it with your white cane if you are doing live sound, so that you may familiarize yourself with the facility before showtime. It makes an extraordinary difference if you feel comfortable with your surroundings, because you can participate in load out and load in using both hands like any member of a team would. He had answers for each of my doubts. God has given me the privilege to live a life filled with opportunities that I've diligently managed to take. When I lived in Denver to receive training at the Colorado Center for the Blind, I shadowed audio engineers 9 times. I got to experience Broadway's Aladdin and DCPA's The Color Purple from behind the board. Theaters, a tango festival, and a recording studio were fertile ground for exploration. A young A1 in particular, Megan Holdeman stands out in my list of adventures. Not only did she enthusiastically open her doors and show me the Digico SD9 that she was using, she also looked for more places in the city where they'd welcome my whole self to ask questions and learn as an equal. The invaluable mentorship of the people who have stood beside me demonstrates that each of us, through our lived experience, can look out for each other, and by marching together, we have the ability to make this world a better place. I believe there is beauty to be found in our battles. Whether you choose to be a lawyer, an architect, a professor, a scientist, a baseball player, or a sculptor, there are inevitably going to be challenges in your way. There will be times when you feel like quitting, moments when your determination is struggling for breath. But challenge is where our faith and spirit grow strong, and it is in struggle where we find the richest, most exquisite rewards. If life is in one way or another going to throw us degrees of difficulty to conquer, we may as well choose an activity that provides us great amounts of joy in its pursuit, a purpose that transcends our sense of time and goes beyond the ordinary. Choose with patience and wisdom what you would like to struggle at. I will take the liberty to end with a passage from Coldplay's song Us Against the World. Quote, "So whatever you do, don't let go," unquote. And that about wraps up this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour. This program covers the week of April 14th, 2024. My name is Bill. Thanks for joining us this week. This program, as always, is a production and presentation of Mind's Eye Radio in Belleville, Illinois. So until next week, stay cool, stay comfortable, and stay safe. And hope you'll join us next week. Till then, see you. Bye.
Is Bird Note. In late April, in the Arizona desert, it's already over 90 degrees by 11 a.m., and the mercury is still rising. A cactus wren sings, perched atop a many-lobed cactus. Then it hops down to its nest, tucked among the spiny lobes of the prickly pear. In a desert realm where it's hot enough to fry an egg on a flat rock, how can the delicate nestlings of a cactus wren survive? Well, cactus wrens, which may nest several times between March and September, carefully orient their nests in tune with the season. Their bulky twig structures, shaped roughly like footballs, have a side entrance. That tubular entrance curves toward the inner chamber. When building a nest for the hot months, the wren faces the opening to receive the afternoon breeze. This circulates cooling air through the chamber and over the chicks. By contrast, a cactus wren building a nest in early March orients the entrance away from the cold winds of that season, keeping the chicks snug and warm. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day. And you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at BirdNote Radio.
This is your Better Business Bureau with our tip of the week. When doing business these days, it is important to do your research. The BBB recommends typing a company name into your favorite search engine with words like complaint and scam. You can search for a phrase that describes your situation, like IRS call. You can even search for phone numbers to see if other people have reported them as scams. And when in doubt, check with BBB. Know who you're dealing with. If you've only ever met someone online or are unsure of the legitimacy of a business, take some time to check them out. Search the internet for others who may have had dealings with them. If a message comes from a friend and it seems unusual or out of character, contact your friend directly to check if it was really them who sent it to you. Remember to call BBB if you suspect a scam or want to report a scam, even if you don't lose money. Your scam report will help prevent additional victims. Our toll-free number is 1-866-566-9222.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.